Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to Autism and Scouting Radio, your source for acceptance, enrichment, inspiration, and empowerment within the Autism and Asperger's Scouting communities. Our show will be starting shortly. To listen to archives of previous broadcasts, visit www.autismempowerment.org and click on the Autism and Scouting or Autism Empowerment Radio tab. As a nonprofit charity, we rely on public generosity to fund our programs, special events, support services, and radio broadcasting. Thank you for considering a tax-deductible donation today. Our show is now beginning.
Hi, and welcome back to Autism and Scouting Radio. My name is John Kreitcher, and I will be your host today. Autism and Scouting Radio is part of the Autism and Scouting program, which is the core program of Autism Empowerment. First of all, I'd like to thank my wife, the Executive Director of Autism Empowerment, who was my co-host yesterday when we did a show that did about where we talked about parades and how your scouting can be successful in a parade situation. We also did, on the Autism Empowerment side of the radio, we did a spooktacular show where we gave Halloween tips on how to work with your kids and make Halloween a success. Hopefully everyone had a wonderful Halloween. We've gotten some great feedback about both of the shows already, and we're just looking for some more positive shows in the future. We'll be posting a blog by the same topic, that is the one on parades, at autismandscouting.blogspot.com and autismandscoutingradio.blogspot.com by the end of the week. Karen will be back on air with me on Tuesday, where we will be talking about how our training went this past weekend. This weekend coming up, we have two trainings coming up, an advanced course and a regular course to work with leaders within the Cascade Pacific Council. Next week, we have four shows coming up. It's just going to be a crazy week. We have some scouts coming on talking about their special interests, what they love about scouting, and just it's basically a celebration of them. We have some content coming up, so check our schedule as far as what and get plugged into those. November is already pretty much booked. We still have a few dates open. We're already booking into December, and we're looking into January already. So if you have a story to share and want to be back on air with us, please email me at john@autismempowerment.org. I've been looking forward to today's show for at least about a month. And I have to say, we have an amazing guest that's coming back on. She's an author, a teacher, an Aspie, an overall amazing person, Jennifer Coco Toole. She's been on the air a few times before, and I just can't get enough of her, and just she's more than welcome to always come back. Jennifer is the winner of the 2012 Temple Grandin Award, 2012 Grass Spectrumite Award, which we, that's where we met her this past spring. She was nominated for Disney's American Teacher of the Year and a continuing expert columnist for Modern Parent Online. Her education includes graduating with honors from Brown University, graduating school social work at Columbia University, as well as graduate work also at Queen's University. Jennifer's first book, Asperger Kids, An Insider's Guide to Loving, Understanding, and Teaching Children with Asperger's Syndrome, is the first book in the series of the Asperger Kids collection, and it's geared towards parents, teachers, and caregivers that work with children with autism on the autism spectrum, specifically with kids with Asperger's. But after reading the book, you'll quickly learn, as I did, that it can be applied to any child on the autism spectrum. It's just an amazing, amazing book. Autism Asperger Digest says of the book that it's one of those books that is an absolute must-read. In September, her second book came out, The Secret Book of Social Rules for Asperger Kids, a handbook for the not-so-obvious social guidelines for teens and tweens with Asperger Syndrome. This was released with some amazing success. My wife, who is also an Aspie herself, says so many times that she really wished she would have had this book around growing up, and it would have saved her a lot of problems, issues, and I strongly, strongly suggest you pick up, if not both books, definitely this book. It's an amazing book. In fact, she's just coming back from a month-long European book signing tour. I have to say I'm a little bit upset with Jennifer because when I offered to come along and hide in her luggage, she declined, but hopefully in the next time around. Also, I wanted to point out that Jennifer's first two books, which I just mentioned, have also been named by Autism Speaks Family Library, and they're truly hoping that the information that she shares is a read for all. So it's an endorsement by a lot of people. Her third book, Home Sweet Asper Kids, Preparing the Launchpads for Everyday Superheroes, is coming out in February 2013, and it's already on my want list. So there you go, Karen. There's my Christmas list for you. All three books are published by Jessica Kingsley Publishers. Today, we're going to dive into the area of special interest. So why don't we just go ahead and bring Jennifer on. Welcome, Jennifer.
Hi, John. Thank you so much. I tell you what, first of all, I always say you and Karen, I just want to adopt your family and make you move to North Carolina with me. But besides that, you all are just so kind. And so I'm thrilled to be here. And I will definitely happily put you in the suitcase. I think it's like over 23 kilograms gets a little extra charge. I'm not really sure I don't remember what that translates to. Well, you all have to we'll cough that one up there.
Maybe an airline ticket might be cheaper for me.
It might be. Who knows?
So how was your trip to Europe, first of all?
Oh, my gosh. It was so phenomenal. We were there for 17 days. The whole family went. We were primarily in England, briefly in Ireland, and in Cork, Shine Ireland, Autism Jigsaw. It was just fantastic. We had opportunities that were both, large in the sense that, like at, for instance, in Cork in Ireland, I was speaking to a conference of over 450 people, and also incredibly intimate, that were just one-on-one moments that I think I will take with me for the rest of my life. I feel so incredibly privileged to get the chance to bring hope where there should be so much, and due to a myriad of circumstances, there often isn't. And people would, in every instance, there were the right kind of, I call it, the right kind of tears flowing, and people would always apologize. And my answer is always the same: it's that's the hope bubbling out, and it's been waiting for a while, and that's good stuff. And yeah.
I hate when people apologize because I ask people, don't apologize. I get it.
right. What's the line? Something along the lines of, people don't cry because they're weak, but because they've been strong for too long.
Right.
And so I'm really excited that I've been invited to speak at this conference in Ireland again next fall. But then I think that this spring I'm going to actually get to go do an Irish tour, which would be just fantastic. They don't have a lot of folks come over to Ireland necessarily as the main destination. People go to London. It's just a hop on a plane over, and it was fantastic. So and what also really struck me, I actually just started doing a mini series on my blog. So it's askforkids.com/blog or Jessica Kingsley Publisher's blog as well. There are links on Facebook as well about it was surprising, maybe it shouldn't be, there were frequently asked questions. So, I kept joking that it was like a small world ask for all, because it was the same primary questions, that whether being asked here in North Carolina or there in Ireland or London, or Manchester or wherever, it was the same questions. And I think that's really important, because that in and of itself is sort of a bonding moment.
Right, and what we find a lot of times is even if you answer the questions, 6 months later you'll have a whole set of new people asking the same questions again.
Absolutely.
So it's like a never-ending cycle. So let's get to some of those foundational questions. What is an Asper Kid, and what are your ideals behind promoting the Asper Kid ideal?
So I love this question because I'm a complete word geek, and I got to make up a word, and I didn't even mean to. It was great. So I started using the word Asperger girls because the first person in our family to be diagnosed was my daughter, and she's the eldest of our children, and that was a term that I, you know, just borrowed from Rudy Simone's book Asperger Girls. And so I was using it to make it sound, to make, I get Asperger syndrome sound so darn clinical, and a big emphasis in our house has always been on the potential, not the problem, and so we wanted it to sound positive. So I always thought, gee, Asperger girl sounds fun, you know. And then our boys were diagnosed, so I had to be more gender neutral. So I just started saying Asperger kids because it was gender neutral. And honestly, it was a phrase I used throughout the book, which my first book, which when I submitted had a different title. And the publisher was fantastic, and my editor is actually the CEO of Jessica Kingsley, being Jessica Kingsley herself. And, you know, she said, I love every single thing except for the title. And, you know, and I think a lot of people are very attached to things like that. And, okay, go for it, you know, whatever you think. And they were kind of floundering for a while, and I threw out there, what about Asperger? Because I use it all the time in the book, and they just jumped on it. That's it. So it has become a word that folks say. It's a hashtag on Twitter, which, I mean, how cool is that, you know? But basically, it's my way of trying to avoid using the word, the words Asperger's or has Asperger's syndrome or has autism. It's a description of the pattern, right? And it's mm-hmm. also to emphasize the fact, yeah, the Aspie part of us is absolutely there, but so is the kid part. And you know, one of the things that always strikes me is that when I will make suggestions for children who are on the spectrum about whether it's in, you know, in parenting or in teaching, it's so often folks will say, oh, yeah, well, that would work for any child. And I always say, yes, it would. You know, that's not surprising. That's because these are regular children, too. And, you know, Asperger's is a lot like life with the volume turned up. And so, therefore, the same things are going to work, but you just have to be a little more sensitive. But, yeah, absolutely. So these kids are, they are Asperger's. They do have Asperger's, you know, but they are also kids.
Yeah, Karen says that I have the kid part down, and she's trying to turn me to the Asper side.
Man, yeah. You're almost there, John. I'm sorry, almost.
Okay, so let's get into today's topic is special interest. Just to be real basic, what is a special interest?
Yeah, special interest is a lovely way of phrasing what a lot of other people would probably use the word obsession. Obsession sounds, you know, awfully pathological and bad. I think it was like basic instinct or something. It's not a good thing. Well, folks on the spectrum, whether you have Asperger's or whether you're just somewhere else on the spectrum, almost without fail, have a topic that is of particular interest to them, where their knowledge is almost professorial, you know, and it changes, it differs per person, it changes over time. Sometimes the duration of that interest can be really, you know, just a day. Sometimes, and more often, it can be years. And even when something comes up as the new special interest, whatever was a special interest remains something to which that individual always feels connected. And it's usually kind of obvious because it's something that the person wants to talk about and think about and read about and learn about more than everybody else. And they that individual may talk and go on about it more than anyone else necessarily wants to and may not even realize that other people aren't interested anymore. But my main thrust in sort of pointing out special interests and their import to the neurotypical, that is the rest of the world, folks, is that this special interest is not just something to be tolerated. That's your kid. You know, you see the easy button, right, on, was it Office Max, I think? That's their easy mm-hmm. button. This is an Asperger kids, a spectrum kids, easy button. This is the way to get them to think about, learn about, do almost anything if you can make it somehow relate to that topic. And that's really important because at the very basis of so much of what we do as folks on the spectrum, it's anxiety, you know, and so our thinking gets really rigid. Our routines and our mannerisms maybe become rigid. Even our word choices are, you know, the sameness is a way of counteracting a world that feels very chaotic and scary. And so when we have a topic that we can feel like we can find out every iota of information and think about that and talk about that, that's a way to feel comfortable. And so if you're challenging someone to do something that is emotionally difficult or difficult as far as attention goes or sensory or even organizationally, if there's something about it that relates to that passion, it's going to be better. I mean, after all, whoever you are, if what you're learning or talking about has to do with something you enjoy, aren't you going to want to do it more than if
Absolutely.
It sounds like, if I talk to you about needlepoint for 17 hours, I wouldn't, because I wouldn't even know like 17 minutes worth of information, but your eyes are probably going to glaze over it at a certain point, but maybe not to someone else.
That brings up an interesting question, because a lot of times in the scouting world, the time is very limited. Just like in the classroom, you only maybe have an hour, maybe an hour and a half of time.
Yeah.
What happens when you have someone who has a special interest that's just so intense, and you want to be able to engage them, but that's all they can talk about, and to get them focused on something else, because you also have other people that you need to focus on?
Absolutely. Well, I think one of the good tricks, I think, and trick sounds terrible, one of the good tools to use is to give that person maybe, when I say a limit, something, you literally draw on a piece of paper. I'm going to say, let's say five check marks or five boxes, you know, and say, okay, Bobby, I know that you love cars. You know so much about cars, dude, you could probably make Henry Ford, you know, look like, you know, who, Betty Crocker. So that's fantastic. But the fact is, we all have things we've got to learn from each other, and we want to keep everybody doing, you know, the same thing a little bit here. So see these boxes? That is how many times you are allowed to talk about cars during and give the set time period. You know, you can talk about them back home. You can think about them all you want. There's no limit to that. But this is so we can make sure everybody gets a fair chance to talk. And fair, using the word fair is a big deal, because we on the spectrum really have a core instinct for fair, and we don't want to be unfair. So, not being pejorative, not saying people are tired of hearing about it, don't put down the interest, because that's like putting down the person. It's not, I realize that, but it's held that close to the heart that the person will feel as if he or she themselves is being put down. And so that's a little bit dangerous. But, of course, if you have an entire pack of kids who are, you know, you are going to be out there teaching them the basics of first aid, and the child wants to simply talk about, let's say, cars or whatever the case may be, that's not going to get you through the lesson. So I understand that. By giving them a concrete check-off list, it helps them see how often they are referring to something, and helps give them feel in charge of the conversation as well, that they're not just being controlled by somebody else arbitrarily.
Now, I've seen this happen before, and, you know, I cringe, but I've seen other people do this. Can a leader or parent kind of fake their way through being interested in the scout?
Yeah. Bad. My husband calls that being a poser. It's really bad. I mean, it's better than nothing. So, you know, but I think everybody likes to talk about themselves. We know that's a general rule. And in fact, in the secret book of social rules, I mean, that's one of the things I refer to, that poof, you're interesting, it's ask other people about themselves, right? Everyone wants to talk about themselves. So ask the question instead of pretending that you know. I think that's a good tip. If you don't know a lot about Star Wars and the kid wants to talk about Star Wars, don't act like you're an expert, because when the child finds out that you are the poser, you've just lost all credibility. It's much safer to say, you know, I really have no idea what the heck Jabba the Hutt was. What the heck was he? Let the kid tell you. Let them feel relevant, you know. lying in general, and that's what really it will feel like. Lying, even with a good purpose, is still lying, and that the kid isn't going to see your purpose. They're just going to see the lie.
And they won't be able to trust you then for other things.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Plus, it's not very good leadership skills either.
It's not. It's absolutely not. And it's, there's the whole white lie thing. I mean, that's not something that folks on the spectrum really get. I mean, in general, we are honest to what other folks would probably say to a fault, you know. Instead, what I recommend adults do is view that special interest as a gateway, a window into that child and what he or she values and who he or she is. For instance, my husband growing up used to, you know, went through various phases. He's an Aspie as well. And at different points, it might have been model airplanes, tanks, knights with a K. That sounds like, okay, well, either it sounds completely random or it sounds like he's got a military fetish. And, you know, maybe this is a violent child. Not at all. As an adult, he's a policeman. And the reason, same reason that he was interested in those things then, was because he was interested in right and wrong and being fair and being the good guy and taking
another
care of people
common
who
needed trait.
A good guy. Yeah, exactly. Right. And so I encourage adults who are working with or loving these children to not only use the special interest as a way to teach the child, but also to learn about the child and to understand what the child thinks is most important in the world. And it's very interesting. You'll see specific trends in girls versus in boys.
How so?
Well, boys tend to be specifically more interested. Their special interests tend to be things that are more mechanical and that are less, I can only say less alive. So it might be, certainly not human. It could be animals. So you may see that it's fish or turtles or it may be, dinosaurs for sure. But they're more apt to then be interested also in, space or in, like I said, model airplanes or something like that, in trains. Whereas girls' special interests are absolutely as much cataloged types of information. So you'll still see that massive data, but it often is things that relate to people. And that's actually one of sometimes a challenging fact, because what that means is then that whether it's a diagnostician or or other professional, they don't look closely enough and then will miss the diagnosis in the girl. So they may see her playing Barbies and say, see, there's that's a very typical girl activity, and then they'll miss the diagnosis entirely. But actually the little girl is playing that her Barbies are, like in my daughter's case, they're scripting out Greek myths, and that's Aphrodite and Artemis and Athena, and you ask another seven-year-old little girl to play that, and they're going to look at you funny, you know? So then where a little boy might memorize, train schedules, or they might memorize all the battles of the Civil War, a little girl...
Or the dimensions of a bridge, or...
right, exactly. A little girl... it's very frequent for us. One of my special interests has always been the English monarchy. I could write out for you. I could draw out for you the family tree. That's not normal. It's not typical as much. But, normal in the sense that it's typical. It's very normal for me. But that would be maybe a more typically female presentation of the little boy's train schedule. So it is every bit as detailed. It is every bit, as obsessed with the minutiae. But it's more often to do with people or relationships with people, not necessarily the interest in the people themselves.
Very cool. So we got something fun for you today. We're going to give you... a scouting activity,
yeah.
and a random special interest, and how you could relate the two together. Just kind of random to see how
it's a challenge.
A challenge, exactly. No matter if it's Girl Scouts or Boy Scouts, there's camping involved out in the tents and whatnot.
Right.
So say a child, either girl or boy, doesn't make a difference, probably in this case a boy, since it's the special interest is a car.
Yeah.
How would you relate the car, like a special interest to a car, to camping?
So, okay, I think there's a whole bunch of different ways to do that. And I think, first of all, I just love this because this is exactly how it comes into play. It's a great question, because let's pretend I'm the pack mom and I don't really know a whole lot about cars other than that I drive them, right? So that is then when you start anticipating that the child who knows a lot about cars probably does know a bit about mechanics and engineering. And that's when I would then ask them to start looking at the way you're actually setting up the camp. And can they figure out the way so again, the mechanics, if you will, right? So it's not only can you figure out a way to, say, pack all these things in a more literally pack the items and come up with a better engine, because that's going to be spatial awareness too, and can you think of a way to engineer a better way to get everything that we need, these are all our supplies, to where we need them, and can you think of a way to maybe transport XYZ to there? We don't have a motor, but if we did, what could we do? If we don't, what could we do? And literally have them be the ones who are helping to organize setting up the tents or wherever you're staying, because again, that's mechanical. And so if you're using any tools, that's going to be somebody who's probably mechanically inclined and very adept. Although they might have some trouble with the fine motor, that's okay. That doesn't matter. That's something you practice. But let them teach the others how to do.
No, absolutely. That makes a lot of sense. That's great. Let's try another one.
Okay. I hope that made sense. But yeah.
No, that made a lot of sense. I mean, because in camping, you do have to, the structural integrity of a
right.
tent, the structural,
exactly.
I mean, there's a lot of other things that go along with just not only camping, so having that mindset. Hiking and astronomy.
Okay, so that's probably easier.
I suppose if you're doing that one easy first one, right?
Oh, golly. Okay, all right. Especially if it's nighttime, but obviously, somebody who knows a bit about astronomy probably this is somebody who understands something also about navigation. If not, then before you go camping or hiking, ask them to look into how is astronomy, used in navigation. That's somebody who you want to then set with the compass for the group. And I would actually say for the car, too. That's also because, again, your compass. But with the astronomy, use the compass. Have them be able to talk about how ancient mariners used, the word astronaut, for instance, at the N-A-U-T comes from nautical, meaning sailor. So an astronaut actually means star sailor. So how did the sailors first use and travelers just in general use the stars to navigate when they were traveling and when they, and so hiking is traveling and talking about why the daylight, for instance, why the hours are shorter at different parts of the year. Can they explain that to the rest of the group and explain the way the cycle of the seasons and then the angle of the sun and how a lower angle of the sun is going to give you cooler days and why? And, I would say, yeah, there's lots.
What are the requirements for one of the is to navigate or to go out at night and do a night hike with using the stars? So,
there we go. Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And having them be able to then find out some about latitude and longitude, why we, which one of those? Because one of those, which you probably already know, one there was. There were huge money prizes given out to be able to at sea correctly be able to determine one of those. So I won't tell you what it is and let other people find out. But and why would that be difficult? And then how does that apply? How does that apply now? So yeah, there's a lot.
That's awesome. Okay, let's try another one. Cooking, which a lot of times both in Girl Scouts and again Boy Scouts,
right.
There's cooking that's involved, especially when they're out camping and hiking. Say the child, I picked this one up from you, medieval times.
Medieval times, yes. Fabulous.
So
well, I feel like do those together, I would take them on my trips to Tudor, England, because, oh my gosh, wow. We went to Hampton Court, and boy, were we in those, the kitchens, which were, you know, oh Lord, I mean, just ginormous. And actually, that's a really, really neat way to teach outdoor cooking at all, because those of us who cook on stoves that say low, medium, high, or a specific temperature, you know, don't think about the effort involved in stoking a fire, or why hearth and home are so innately tied, right? You know, and I think that's such an amazing thing when we were taking the kids through Shakespeare's home and showing them and you know, that stoking the fire and how you would never let the hearth one go out. And of course, Maura, again, to her thing with mythology, so talking about Hestia, which is the goddess of that, the hearth fire, because that is, but I said exactly, look at that, it even made it into mythology, the point that fire is so incredibly important, and throughout history has been. So someone who's interested in, you know, in medieval times, or in anything that is older than, gosh, the last maybe, you know, 100 years at all, is gonna know something, or will want to know about variable cooking and temperatures and natural herbs, and using, you know, that what an herb garden is, and it was much more than just flavoring, and that it was also medicinal, and that was really your vanity, your bathroom cabinet was your backyard, or your garden rather. So I mean, there's so much you can do with that, just between
maybe
trying
to... Maybe we'll find recipes from old that they could take out camping, too.
Well, yeah, and what's really interesting is I actually, in my crazy history as a brief stint as a journalist, did a piece about a historical cooking guild, and so I've read a whole bunch of old recipes, and what's really neat is not only do they use recipes or ingredients that are not often available to us now, but beyond that, their measurements were so different. You know, some of this or some of that versus when did and where did, you know, the standard teaspoon or half cup come from. That's interesting to know. And so, and does it change with the climate? Does it change with your altitude if you're hiking? You know, so there's a lot.
Okay, let me give you a harder one.
Okay. I like that one. That would be fun.
For a lot of times, sewing is actually going to be a new merit badge that's going to be coming up, and it's going to be actually required next year for
great.
The Boy Scouts. But in Girl Scouts, it's actually one that's already been around.
Yeah.
What happens if say, the person has an intense interest in mermaids or fairies?
And, you know, that's actually, when I was talking about the different special interests, mermaids and fairies is a very typical one for girls in particular. I guess, maybe I should say, obviously. But again, not just, you know, like Ariel, right? So we're talking about much more specifics. I think that that could be just amazing, too. Well, besides the fact, first of all, my instant thing is, like, make a costume, you know, that is so, but you know, like a good one. But I think then have them research, and then have to use, I keep thinking of Project Runway, and they'll have those challenges where they have to use natural things and, you know, make costumes that actually have to sew, you know, leaves or whatever, and flowers and things. I mean, I think that would be sort of amazing, because if you really, let's say this fairies, they really, if you really look at like Tinkerbell and all those, they're wearing a nut on their head, or they're wearing, you know, so what could you envision using that's natural and actually having to sew with that? What could you make a needle out of that is not a steel, or, you know, a piece of steel? And looking at through the, you know, whether it was bone or looking at wood, I mean, I think that's kind of, that could be really interesting about the different ways that people have sewn. We're Native Americans, you know, what do you need that if you're going to get through leather or hide versus if you're getting through cloth? So that would certainly tell you. But, you know, and then with the mermaids, I just keep thinking of, you know, making a quilt and the way that stories could be told through a quilt, like an Underground Railroad. Well, how could they do that then? How could they tell the story of the Nereids, or, you know, of the Banshee, or the little people in Ireland, and through making a quilt, because that is really storytelling. There's a whole language to that. So, or doing the way children used to do primers and be able to do that. I mean, that could be absolutely amazing. That could really be a spectacular project, actually.
There you go. You're just amazing. Let's try one more, and hopefully people get a feel for, you know, what we're kind of, you basically take the idea and then you kind of tweak the idea to what their interest is.
Right, absolutely.
First aid, which is a huge number, again,
huge
Boy Scouts, Girl Scouts, no matter what, that's pretty big. And we'll go with a boy type of obsession for the most part, computers.
Oh, you chauvinist. You chauvinist. Okay,
I did Mermaids and Fairies, okay.
Oh, I know, but computers is good. That's neutral. Well, actually, you know, something that I just saw, which a lot of people have probably lately in the last couple of days, was that, and I did not realize that the American Red Cross has an app on, you know, iTunes. And so, which was one of the best, you know, most downloaded free apps in the last week because of the Hurricane Sandy. And what an amazing thing then perhaps to either have the child, the best thing is to get them actively involved rather than just passively. So the passive, you know, involvement would be obviously going on the computer or doing research. That's kind of boring. Much more interesting, although it's the beginning, but much more interesting would be then to generate either their own program, because that would be fantastic, to an if-then type of, you know, okay, given 10 emergency scenarios, what do you do? And or to come up with an encyclopedia of the best first aid resources that are online, or how can you use technology to better enable people to access first aid knowledge, so that perhaps they come up with a small and like make themselves literally create a small wallet-sized card that they can laminate, and they have on it things that from a smartphone or from a tablet that somebody could access the best either sites or apps or whatever that they could access from a remote location to be able to guide them through, whether it's CPR or whatever the case may be, or burn response, you know. I think that could be something then that you could actually have a filing system of all these little cards that whenever you're going into a particular environment, people could have the card in their wallet, that or store them as their own app within, on a smartphone.
You're amazing.
No, I'm doing this. I'm going, no, I'm just thinking of all the kids that I could do, all the things they could do. So this is why I'm just a teacher till I die, I guess. It's good stuff, though. The kids are amazing when they can do it. The fact is, what the amazing thing is that they can do it. I'm blabbing it, like, you know, out of my, I'm just sitting here going blah, 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 but they can actually do it. I can do that. That's amazing.
Well, this is the whole idea, is to give people an idea of how to access, to unlock that, I don't want to say unlock the child, but unlock their special interest.
So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. But, I mean, that to get them more involved. We had 45 minutes today. We have actually 5 minutes left, which is just amazing. I'm just so blessed that you were able to spend the time. Before I give you the final thoughts, I want to tell people, make sure you go out and buy her two books. They're both amazing books. Asperger Kids, an Insider's Guide to Loving, Understanding, and Teaching Children with Asperger Syndrome, and my wife's absolute favorite is The Secret Book for Social Rules for Asperger Kids, A Handbook for the Not-So-Obvious Social Guidelines for Teens and Tweens with Asperger Syndrome, done by Jessica Kingsley Publishing. And, again, her third book will be coming up in February.
Yeah.
Go ahead, and I'll let you take us out with final thoughts on special interests.
Sure. Well, you know, first of all, thank you for mentioning the books, because people will say to me, well, what do you think about? And I'll often say, well, have you had a chance to read the book? Because really, I put my best stuff in there, I promise. I'm not a salesperson. I'm just really honest. And the way I sort of describe the Asperger Kids books is that it's a bit like shampoo and conditioner. And, you know, they would tell you, always tell you, well, you probably don't as a boy, but they do. They tell you, as girls, we know this, they tell you on the shampoo, you know, for best results, use with the same type of conditioner. And it's sort of true, because I think that is with anything, including any kind of child, whatever kind of child we are on the human spectrum, you know, is a conversation. And so I intended those first two books to be a conversation. Asper Kids is really meant for the adults themselves, for professionals, teachers, parents, parents of friends, you know, and to understand where the kids are coming from. Because in order to, like you said, access or unlock or just engage the kids, you got to know where they're operating. And then similarly, in order for that child to operate in the world where typical isn't how they're wired, they have to know what everybody else expects. And you know, when they can come home, they can be themselves and whatever that sort of means. And in fact, they don't even need to choose to follow the sort of hidden curriculum is a line that Brenda Miles uses, you know, but these unwritten social rules, they don't need to follow them, but there are going to be consequences if they don't. It's going to be a lot harder to make friends or find a date or get a job. And so it's sort of making sure that both sides of the conversation are working together and showing respect for one another. And when you are a teacher, which is really what a scouting leader is, let's be honest, is certainly what a parent is, in order to do your best job, obviously, you've got to try to understand who it is that you're working with. But we all as the adults also know that a lot of times we find out that we're learning more from them than we're actually teaching them. So, you know, it's not important that you be an expert on all things autism or on all things Asperger or on all things special interest. And I think that John and his wife have been kind in all their words about my books that I try very hard to write in a style that is like sitting down and having a cup of coffee together. You know, that's the kind of information I think that people need, that how to understand these regular kids in really cool disguises, by recognizing who they are and showing respect and giving dignity to that person, as opposed to treating the child as a broken or less than, in and of itself, That is a great, great gift and fantastic lesson, and that will last forever, perhaps longer even than a lesson in navigation or in sewing.
Absolutely. Well, I have to honestly say, I mean, truly from the bottom of our hearts, we think the books are just incredible. And make sure people check out asperkids.com. You can see her lovely family there, her Asper Kids and herself. And just want to thank Jennifer again for coming on. And I know Karen wants to get you on Autism in Autism Empowerment Radio. And I'm sure
anytime.
She'll be contacting you. Thank you so much, Jennifer, and you have a wonderful day.
It is my pleasure. As always, you keep doing the amazing work you're doing, John, because you're changing lives out there, and that's big stuff.
Thanks.
Well, absolutely.
Day.
I do, too. Bye-bye now.
Bye.
You've been listening to Autism and Scouting Radio, your source for acceptance, enrichment, inspiration, and empowerment within the autism and Asperger's Scouting communities. To listen to archives of previous broadcasts, visit www.autismempowerment.org and click on the Autism Empowerment Radio tab or visit our Autism and Scouting page. Thank you so much for listening.
Thank you, everyone, for tuning in, and have a wonderful day. Bye.